Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm your host, Belinda Ellsworth, and I'm really excited about our guest today. I have Matt Johnson with me, and Matt is a marketer, an entrepreneur. He's a podcast expert and musician. Matt runs a podcast PR and production agency based in San Diego, an international team that helps business coaches and consultants break in and dominate their niche through podcasting. Matt currently hosts niche business podcasts and recently launched the Podcast Pitch Assistant Program to help experts get pitched to podcasts consistently without doing any of the back-end work themselves. He is a frequent podcast guest and event speaker to audience around the U.S., Canada, and Australia. It's my pleasure to welcome Matt to our show.
Hey, Belinda, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. So let's just, it's exciting. I always get excited when I have a guest that I think, I can use this information. This is going to be awesome.
That's right. Then you can ask selfish questions, which are the best kind, right?
Yes, absolutely. So why don't we start out by just filling people in on some of your background? Like, how did you get to this place of being an expert in this podcast world? Tell us a little bit about your journey.
Absolutely. So 5 years ago, I was just some dude working at a marketing agency, and I was managing accounts and doing fun stuff like that. And I got an opportunity to get into business development. And the CEO had this crazy idea that the way that they were going to do business development was to jump on and host webinars with the major influencers in their space, because they were super niche. Nobody knows who they are outside of the niche that they run in. I happen to have a background in that niche. So that's how I got in with that agency to begin with. So basically, I got thrown into doing live video webinars with people that were running 7- and 8-figure businesses. And I had essentially no business being on those webinars asking them questions. However, because I had been in that business, I knew all the books, I knew all the coaches, I knew the material. Those webinars started to go really well. And I started to ask just good questions. And I had opinions about the industry myself. And I started to get some leeway to share some of those opinions on those webinars. And one of the guys I was co-hosting webinars with just called me up one day and said, dude, we need to start a podcast. Like, we're messing around here. Like, we need to get serious. And what's funny is I was already thinking about pitching him the same thing. So it was good timing. So we basically turned a series of live webinars into a podcast. And that was 4 years ago. That ended up being named one of the top 5 podcasts in the residential real estate space, and it's over 1 million downloads and all that fun stuff. Then that got me into launching podcasts. So I was kind of doing marketing consulting outside of hosting that show, and one of the most effective things I did for people was get them booked on podcasts and launch their own podcast. So again, it was one of those things where I was kind of already, because of my experience with the agency, I was looking for what is that one thing I'm going to sell to one type of person. And I just kept hammering away until I found it. And that's basically what I do now. So I run a digital agency. We sell one packaged podcast service to one specific type of person, which is emerging thought leaders. And that's what we do. And that's what kind of fuels the lifestyle.
That sounds amazing. Great. Yeah. So tell us a little bit how the business has shaped your lifestyle today.
Yeah. So when I moved to San Diego and I got the opportunity to work for that agency, I set out how many hours a week I wanted to work, how much I wanted to make, and all those sorts of kind of big goal things. Mm-hmm. And it turns out I had to leave the agency to do it, which is fine. So I got into being, you know, an entrepreneur almost by accident. I got pulled into it. But once I was there, I was able to kind of systematize the way that we do things and package it in such a way that I can have the majority of the on-the-ground work done by my team. And I come in and I only do the few things that I'm really good at and that really get me up out of bed in the morning, which is the strategy and to a lesser extent, writing for the clients, and then just leading the team. So that kind of feeds into like what I found out were my strengths, but essentially I built the entire business. So it's around those three strengths, and I have the team do everything else. And then I just lead the team. So that takes me between 4 to 6 hours a week to actually meet with them, make sure that things are staying on track. There's a couple hours in there that's set aside for, you know, new client consultations or getting new clients started up and things like that, so that the agency keeps growing. But for the most part, yeah, like the other hours that I spend are mine to do with what I want. So I wrote a book. I started that in March. That comes out later this year. I run my own podcast. I'm a guest on podcasts and things like that. All those sorts of like thought leadership types of things that feed the next phase of the business obviously is done outside of those 4 to 6 hours a week that it takes me to run the agency, but they're all optional. Like I do it because they're what I love to do. Like the podcasting is what I would do even if you didn't pay me. And so for me, like I consider like the actual work that I do probably 6 to 8 hours a week. The rest of it's me doing just what I love to do.
That's awesome. So what have you identified as some of your greatest skill sets that have truly helped you be successful in your business?
Yeah. So there was a point, I think it was like 2.5 years ago. I was like a year into running the agency. We were getting it packaged up pretty well. I think at that point we had two different service options. And so we had some clients that were on each one. And so the demands were a little bit spread out. And for whatever reason, like I woke up that morning and it just dawned on me that the agency only needed three things from me. At that time, it was strategy, copywriting, and project management. And so I'm like, well, if that's all it needs from me, then I need to get all like anything that doesn't fit into those three buckets, I've got to get it off of my plate. So I started to look at what my team was doing, who I had on my team. I started bringing in other specialists in different like part-time roles, and basically just started like kind of reshaping how I ran the agency so that other people were doing the things that they were good at. And I only did those three things. And then the project management has kind of evolved as I've promoted people on the team to handle more of that, to where it's more about leading the people who are doing the projects than doing the projects myself. So anyway, yeah, those are the three things. And it was a realization that would never have hit me if I didn't become an entrepreneur, because at my last company, what I realized later on was that the person I worked for had the same three skill sets. So I was in an environment where there was somebody else that was already 5 years ahead of me and developing all of those skills.
Right.
So my skill, like I couldn't even recognize my skills until I got out into the world where I had to build my own thing. And then it's like, oh, those are the three things that I'm good at. I should probably do more of those things.
That's interesting. How many people do you think get stuck in that situation that they're working alongside someone who has the same skill set that overshadow them in their developing of those skill sets, or even recognizing that is what they're really good at? That's interesting.
Yeah, isn't it? And I wouldn't have guessed if you had told me 5 years ago that's what they were. I don't know that I would have even agreed. I had to get out of that environment in order for those to even come to the surface. So my guess is there's a lot of people, either they're working with or working for people that may just be a couple years ahead of them. And so they think they're not as good, when it actually is your strength. It just needs to be put into an environment where there's a demand on it, where it has to work and you have to get results. And then your superpowers like have the chance to kind of shine.
I think that falls though into leadership roles within an organization, of letting certain individuals shine or allowing people to not always take the lead. Or how do you, like with somebody like yourself who is there 6 to 8 weeks and you let that team run the show, how do you identify a person's strengths that might not know what their strengths are?
Well, I think you take a look at what they do outside of their work hours. That definitely helps. So for me, one of the questions that when I was interviewing for the role at that agency, one of the questions that the CEO asked me on our very first phone call was like, tell me the books that you're reading right now. And I looked over at the pile of books and it was a bunch of stuff on like strategy and marketing and leadership and stuff like that. So things like that show you where your interests are. And so I ask my team kind of the same things, and I get a sense of what they do in their off hours, what they do for fun, how they think, whether they're introverted, extroverted, because I think those things give us a clue to what we're good at and what we're drawn to, even though we might be in a role that doesn't take advantage of those things. And so I want to know what they're good at. So we also do DISC assessments within the team, which isn't perfect, obviously, but I'm super experienced in that particular one. Myers-Briggs is also great, and there's a bunch of others that are good. But I think things like that, to get a sense of somebody's behavior, what their interests and what they're drawn to, will give you a clue as to what their superpower is, even if they might not be using that in your team right now.
Well, that's great. Great advice for people out there in the interview process. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's one of your most outstanding accomplishments or something that you've achieved that's super meaningful for you?
I think at this point, the most meaningful thing in the business world is finishing the book. Right. So the first draft is done. I'm in the final editing. You know what I'm talking about. It's a beast. And it's one of those things where it can easily become something you talk about doing and you already start to consider yourself an author. And then you realize, wait a minute, I don't have a published book yet. Until I have a book that is physically in my hand, I have not published a book. And so, yeah, like right last year, I wrote the first draft of a book and realized I wrote the wrong book. So then I started from scratch. This year, it took me literally six times as long as I thought it would. I cranked out that first book last year in 30 days before I realized it was just the wrong content for my business at this point. So I thought I would do it again. Instead, it took me 6 months to get the content right. Now that's worth it. It'll be worth it because it's going to set me up to be in this space for the next 50 years. And it's my first kind of really, really public step into the world. And I wanted it to be an authentic statement of my strategy and my recommendations for my ideal clients. So it's all worth it. But yeah, in terms of like the toughest achievement in the business so far, it's definitely been that because it's such an internal struggle.
It really is. And I don't think, unless you've gone through it, that anyone truly understands what that is. So my hat is always off to people that write books. In fact, when I do book reviews, I always, you've got to find something good in this book. Like there's always a nugget because I know what it took to write that book. So I'm always on the hunt for those nuggets and what people might really walk away from. So your book is the Micro Famous book, or writing.
Yep, it's called Micro Famous. Yeah. It's how to be famously influential to the right people. So it's all about how to use, like how to systematically use podcasting and guest interviews and break them down into small micro chunks of content so that you position yourself as like the established thought leader in your niche.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is awesome. So then talk about a challenge or something that you have faced, and I'd love a story, and how you worked through that.
Yeah. So around that time, I realized that the business only needed three things from me. I also realized something else. I think it was within a couple of months that both of these realizations dawned on me, which is that I was in four different businesses. At the time I had my agency, I was starting up a membership website and I was a partner in two different like consulting coaching companies, right? In the real estate space. What I realized is that I was starting to show up and I was dreading the meetings because I was the one that was walking away with the longest to-do list and everybody else is like, all right, well, let's, Matt, let me know when that stuff is done. And yeah. I'm like, no, that's not happening. So I really wanted to pare it down to the things that I was the most passionate about. And what I realized is that that was mainly the agency. And then I still have my core real estate podcast and we have a team that operates on the back end of that, that I have an ownership share in, but I don't like, I essentially got my partner to mostly take over the inner workings of that. So I restricted myself down to the thing that I felt the most ownership over, that I had the most control, and that I had the biggest stake in the outcome. And I let go of everything else, which meant that membership website didn't launch. It meant that the coaching and training company I was a part of continued on without me. I gave up my equity stake. Like all that stuff, I just had to like get myself out of those things one by one over the course of 3 or 4 months. But I can tell you, like when I shed that last ownership stake in that last other business that wasn't really mine, and I was free to really focus on my agency, it was like coming up for air. It was insane. And I can't, if you've ever been in that position where you say yes to too many things and then you have to like all of a sudden pull back, but you get the balance right and you realize, okay, now this is the one thing I need to be focusing on. And I finally have the energy to really put into growing my one thing. It's a really incredible, liberating feeling.
It is. And I know that people listening So I would love to just dive into this just a teeny little bit more, because this is probably people's greatest struggle that are successful. And I'll say why, and I'm sure you know the reason why, but it's like, when you're really good at something, usually you're good at multiple things, and you make sure that you're good at it. You read what you need to read. You research what you need to research. You just become good at it. And because you have a really good, strong work ethic, you'll usually become good at multiple things. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that you need to say yes to everything. And I think that is the greatest challenge as you're, especially as you're growing. I think that people feel that they need to say yes to everything. And they're like, well, I do good at that, so I should say yes to that. And that's an opportunity for me. So what was the process that you went through in choosing what was going to be the most valuable? Like, what process did you go through to choose what things do I need to say no to?
Well, it started with, I guess, a better knowledge of myself, and I'm a little bit different because of freedom and autonomy is my number one value, and that's not the same for everybody. So my decision making process was, if I had to limit it to something, I knew I was going to limit it to the thing where I felt like I had the most ownership and I had the biggest stake in the outcome. So that ended up being the agency where I had 100% ownership. Somebody else might say, I want to build the biggest thing possible. And let's find, you know, let's say you're in a business that has, you know, four different partnerships. Let's pick the one partnership that has the biggest potential success, because the, you know, top line revenue or building a business that makes the cover of Fast Company might be a bigger priority. And that's okay too. There's all kinds of entrepreneurs that do really, really well in partnerships or groups of multiple partners, because it gives you the ability to do more things in the business. So my decision-making process was, I wanted to live a lifestyle where I didn't work any more than 30 hours a week. I knew I wanted to live by the beach, which I do. I knew that I didn't want to travel a bunch, which I don't. And like all those things. And it basically narrowed it down to, look, I have to have control of the type of business that I'm involved in, because the lifestyle that I want to live, it wasn't conducive for building a big company with multiple partners.
Okay. So in short, it is really sitting down and getting honest with yourself and really writing a list out of what's important to you, your values, your core values. Like, that is probably the best place to start, and then seeing if all these other projects you're doing align with your core values.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. In fact, one of my buddies led me through that exercise. We just sat down one day and started writing down lists of core values. And then he made me pit them one against the other to figure out which were the most important. Like, hey, if you have to give up this for this, you know, which, or, you know, you can't have these two, pick one. Okay, well, it's this one. Okay, now let's go to the next two, pick one. And basically just made me fight for what my real core values are, which is how I found out that freedom and autonomy was number one. For other people, that might be family life, you know, leaving a legacy. That, like, there's a lot of different things that can be your number one. But yeah, I think we say yes a lot to things for lots of different reasons. But I can tell you what it was for me, which was, I was not confident enough that I would pick the right thing, that I was hedging my bets. Right. Okay, I did the same thing when I was in music. Right. So when I was a musician, at one point I was playing drums in four different bands, and then I started a piano duo where I was playing piano. Turns out it was the piano duo that got signed, of all things. But I did the exact same thing. I made the same mistake in business. I learned exactly nothing from my music experience. But what I was doing was, I was hedging my bets, because I didn't know really which one had the best chance of taking off and building a fan base. And so I did the same thing in business. I guess the realization that I came to in business is that you can make a business successful by the work that you put into it. It doesn't have to be the greatest idea. In fact, the greatest idea, if it's not executed on, ends up being nothing. So I'm like, well, if I'm going to put the same amount of work and effort into making one of these four businesses run and be successful, well, why wouldn't I put it into the one where I get the most rewards out of it when that works, because I know it's going to work. So, you know, basically asking yourself, like, hey, if I knew that this one thing wouldn't fail, would I really say yes to these other things? Probably not.
Right. Yeah. I always just, it's very difficult, you know, and this is just going to the to the simplest of terms, but people ask me this question all the time about running multiple companies and then where should they be putting their energy or, you know, I like this, but I like this and I want to find out. People say that, which one is going to be the one that takes off? Like, I'm going to work them both. And I always just say, it is really hard to chase two rabbits. And that's just in the simplest of simple terms, but it really is hard. And I think that it goes back to that A plan and B plan. Like, it's like, what we're saying, okay, if A doesn't work, I need B. And then if B doesn't work, I've got C here. And so one of these is bound to work. But if you went in saying, here's my A game, and I'm going to put everything I have into this to make sure that it does work, I think people would have a greater level of success.
I think so too. And there's one more thing that helped me that might be helpful to share, which is I really looked deeply at who did I want in my life? Like, who do I want to teach and who do I want to train and who do I want to lead? Right. So I knew, like, once I narrowed down, like, who are the people that I could really get excited about serving for the next few decades, that helped a lot. It helped narrow down what spaces I was in because I realized that, oh, wait a minute, like two of the coaching training companies I was involved in wasn't serving those people. It was serving a different set of people. The people running those companies was those people that I wanted. And that's what drew me to say yes. So once I realized, okay, I said yes because I want to be around those people that are running those companies, not the clients they were selling to, that was a big light bulb. And so if you're thinking about, well, there's two different businesses or I have multiple businesses and I'm trying to figure out where to focus on, think about the clients in those businesses. Like if they said like, hey, I just flew into town, let's go grab a drink. And your first reaction is, what excuse can I come up with? And it's not absolutely, hey, let's figure out a place to meet. That's a clue that maybe those are not the right people. And if you can think about the people that you do want in your life where they call up and want to grab a drink and your first reaction is absolutely, how quickly can I be there and where are we meeting? Like the figure out the business that serves them.
I love that. I just absolutely love that. I'm not even going to add anything else to it. I just do. I kind of said the same thing the other day about, you know, I don't know that at the end of the day that these are the people we really want to be working with. And you know what? It's true. And yeah. I think that that's sometimes, I don't think, I know, that's overlooked in a big way most of the time. And so you worded it so beautifully. I can't even add anything else to that. So thank you. So what's working from your happy place mean to you?
So working from my happy place means for me, I get control over where I spend my time, who I spend my time with, and being able to, I mentioned that I don't work any more than 30 hours a week. I also spread those hours over 7 days a week. So there's rarely a day goes by that I don't work in the morning. I figured out a schedule. It works with my body. I've got like autoimmune issues. So working 60 hours a week for me is just, it's really not an option. I did it for a while when I was at the old agency. It was fine. It worked for a little bit and then I burned out. So for me, like I've got to be able to control who comes in contact with me because I'm a natural introvert. So I can't build, you know, super deep relationships with a whole bunch of people. I have my small, really tight-knit group of friends, and then I want clients that I'm really excited to help. And if they call me, I'm excited to take their call. So I like having that level of control over who has access, who's in my life. And then I want to be able to revolve my schedule around like getting up, working in the morning, going to Starbucks, you know, coming back to my place, doing my podcast, and basically building my entire day around the natural flow of my energy rather than rolling into an office. And then every 3 o'clock in the afternoon, everyone's heads are rolling and everyone's going for coffee, but you can't leave because that's not what you do. You stay until the office until five. I wanted to be in an environment where I kind of had control of all those elements so that I could run the business in a way that like matched my kind of natural energy cycle, if that makes sense. So that's, to me, that's what working with from my happy place means.
That's great. And I totally know what that means because I'd love to leave my own office at 3 o'clock every day. And sometimes I do. I don't do it enough, but I'm like, I just want to leave this office right now. So anyway,
well, if you think about like the setting a limit on how much you work per week, this is what I realized after the fact, after I instituted that it forced me to get creative and delegate and automate more than I would have otherwise. And it gets you out of that mentality of, oh, I set this goal, therefore I'm just going to work really hard to get there. And it forces you to think like a leader instead of like a doer, which that in itself is really valuable.
It's huge. I used to have a gal that worked in my office, and she was a go-getter. Like, she worked pretty hard. And so we're in Michigan, and we don't get huge amounts of beautiful weather on a regular basis like San Diego, but she loved to golf, and I like golfing too. So she would always come in. Okay. I'm going to have all my work done by 2 o'clock today. So you're going to be ready to go get everything you need to get done. And what was so funny is I would get it done, and we would get it done, and we would just leave the office at 2 o'clock and go golfing. And it was fun. But it's like finding that team too. You know what I mean? That have some of those same things. But anyway.
Yeah.
All righty. So what advice would you give to others who want to be entrepreneurs that are there thinking, okay, I want to start this business. I've got an idea. I'm going out on this. What advice would you give?
I'm gonna totally swipe this piece of advice from Seth Godin, which is start with one. So find one person and sell that thing to them, sell them on the idea and get them to exchange their hard-earned cash for it. There's so many ideas that people have that they think, you know, well, the market is 1 million people. If I just get 1%, like, no, that's thinking from the wrong end. Think about getting one person to say yes and fork over real hard-earned cash for it, and then see if you can get a second and a third, and then maybe you have a viable idea. Ideas that only work at scale aren't real ideas, and they actually allow us to hide from just talking to people and getting them to say yes. When I was starting out and first coming out of the agency, the guy that I used to work for came to me and said, hey, I think I see what you're doing with podcasting. Would you be willing to run one for me? I said, yeah, let's do it. Let's try it as an experiment. It worked really well. And that's where the idea for the podcast package came from. Like, it came from just doing it and watching what people responded to. It didn't come because I spotted an opportunity in the overall market and decided, hey, if I could just get 100 podcasts, this business would work. Like, no, it worked from the day one because I found one person that was willing to pay. And since then it's always been a profitable business. So if you can start with one person, sell them one thing, everything else is a potential distraction. Start there.
That's great advice. So what are some new and exciting things that you're working on that our listeners might benefit from? And then please make sure that everyone knows where to find you.
Okay. So best place to find me is just one central location for all the links is just go to getmicrofamous.com, because all the links to the book and my social media and stuff like that will be there. The thing that I'm most excited about is, like, I want to help people who are thought leaders, influencers, coaches, consultants. Like, I want to help them get out into the world and reach their ideal clients. And I've seen a need from working with all these folks, because that's who we serve in our podcast production company. So our main thing is we help them host a show, but they all need to get booked on shows, and we weren't doing that internally as a service. So I created a program that essentially allows you to buy the program, send somebody else through it, and that person can get you pitched and featured on podcasts consistently. So if you want to get on one a month, one a week, doesn't matter, you can send them through this program, and they start pitching you as a podcast guest in week two, and you'll see podcast interviews start showing up on your calendar in week three and four. So if you want to get out there and you want to build a name for yourself, you want to build your personal brand, which even if you're an executive, like, that's becoming a must nowadays, let alone if you're an entrepreneur, right? We all need a personal brand. We all need to be known for something. And one of the fastest, most direct paths to get there is to be interviewed on your area of expertise. And there's plenty of podcasts out there who are starving for really good guests with good content, as Belinda, I'm sure you know. So that's what I'm excited about, because I want to see more thought leaders get out there. I want to see more amazing guests out there on podcasts, because we all need them. I need them. You know, I want to be being pitched by really good people who are experts in their space. So I created that program to help people do that.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I'm excited for the book, and that's coming out. When do you think that's going to land?
Target is second week of December.
Second week of December. Great. Mm-hmm. Well, that's exciting. And thank you so much for being part of our show today. I'm a drummer too, by the way.
Are you really?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
I know. I played the drums many, many years ago. I still have a set downstairs, and I still try to keep just up to speed with it so I could play if I needed to set in here and there. But yeah, it's been a long time since I've played in a band. But
I know, me too. Believe me. Sadly, it's very sad.
But I still love it. So that's good.
Yeah. Got to have your side passions.
That's right. That's absolutely right. So thank you so much for being on our show. And I just want to remind all of our listeners, if you enjoy this interview today, which I know that you're going to, there was so many really great nuggets in here. I hope you'll go back and listen to it again, because most of you are going to be listening to this while you're doing other things like working out and walking and working and cleaning your kitchen and everything else. So make sure that you take the time to go back and really write down some of the really great nuggets that there were in this interview, and make sure you subscribe to our podcast so that you don't miss a single episode. So thanks once again, Matt.
Thanks, Belinda.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.